Are you guys ready to record this whole thing all over again?
I didn't care for it. I didn't buy it.
That seems pretty ridiculous.
I don't even want to think about the possibility of you having your dick out.
Yikes.
Is this the most important thing in the universe? What happened to it? I don't know.
I needed to suck in absolutely every moment of awesomeness.
Yeah.
Hey, welcome back to the great episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. It's going to be a fun one today. We're going to be firing stuff at you rapid fire because this weekend so much happened at San Diego Comic-Con. We had Game of Thrones, had some good movies. But first of all, Justin, Randy, I see you've all made it home safely from Comic-Con. How you doing, Randy? And how you doing, Justin?
I'm still recovering. I could use about a week of sleep, I think. But other than that, fantastic.
Me too. I'm fabulous, but I am a little bit on the tired side, and I go back to work tomorrow.
That sucks.
Bleh.
At least you had a couple extra days, I guess. I'm still reacclimating from the crazy schedule that we kept the 5 days in San Diego, but it's neither here nor there. Lots of cool shit happened. We're going to talk about a lot of it. Some of it's stupid, but we'll talk about a lot of it. I would say probably there were two huge panels that happened at Comic-Con. The first one being the Warner Brothers panel, second one being the Marvel panel. Marvel, of course, bringing their litany of titles, and Warner Brothers bringing a diverse package. They brought Blade Runner 2049, they brought all of their DC stuff, they brought Aquaman, Wonder Woman, Flash, the Justice League. But what got me most excited was Ready Player One, because as any listener who's been around for a while has listened, I won't shut the fuck up about this book/movie, and I'm sure Randy and Justin are sick of me talking about it, but I watched the trailer probably 200,000 million times. I got all the Easter eggs down, you know, I spotted my Deathstroke, my Harley Quinn, my Gandalf, all the cool cars, and I couldn't be more jazzed for it. Out of the Warner Brothers stuff, Justin, what excited you most of all?
Probably Justice League.
The 4-minute super trailer?
Mm-hmm. It was cool stuff. I like how they were all there, and I don't know. It just felt good to me. That's all.
I actually watched the panel on YouTube, and it was cool because they all came from like different parts of Hall H. Like, you know, normally they come from behind the curtain and they walk to their chairs. They all started at different points in the hall and then like met in the center of Hall H and then walked up to the dais. So that was kind of cool. Everyone was super jazzed, especially if you were in the section with Gal Gadot, I guess.
Ooh, she's so beautiful.
Ooh, ooh la la.
Yeah.
What about you, Randy? Was there anything at the Warner Brothers panel that really struck your fancy?
No, I mean, I think just Justice League is the biggest thing, because I've been so on the fence about it. I mean, this is coming from a guy who still hasn't seen BBS yet, so... But it's making me want to.
You can skip it. It's fine.
Yeah. You'll figure it out. Superman dies at the end. That's all you need to know.
Yeah.
I mean, so in the beginning of the movie, when there's no Superman, you won't be confused. Like, why is this Superman in this movie? He will be eventually. But yeah, they showed that awesome 4-minute trailer where everyone kind of got their moment to shine. Post Comic-Con, you know, there's been a lot of grumblings coming out about these reshoots that they may be significantly more extensive than originally thought. Movies of this scale, usually they plan in, you know, 2 to 3 weeks of reshoots, usually runs between $4 and $5 million for the reshoots. The Hollywood Reporter is estimating that they're going to be reshooting for over 2 months and that it's going to cost a reported $25 to $30 million. And I think the greatest thing to come out of this whole thing is the schedules. So Ben Affleck and Gal Gadot are fine because Warner Brothers basically owns them. Ezra Miller is shooting Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them 2, which is another Warner Brothers property, so they're able to work with that. Ray Fisher is Ray Fisher, so he's available. But Henry Cavill, who plays Superman, is currently shooting the 6th Mission Impossible movie, which is distributed by Paramount. And in this movie, he has what's being reported is a thick, awesome Tom Selleck-style mustache.
Oh, yeah.
And Paramount is forbidding him to shave said mustache. So he's going to have this mustache while filming the Justice League reshoots. And so some digital animator is going to have to de-mustache him. And I think this is the most wonderful, semi-petty, but just just unbelievable negotiation tactics. We're going to call it Mustache Gate or something like that. So Randy, does it surprise you that Paramount would be like, yeah, you can have him, but you can't shave his mustache?
No, that doesn't surprise me at all, because as an aficionado of facial hair, having had it myself for pretty much the entirety of my life, it takes a long time for it to grow in and get that nice, thick, kind of bushy appearance, especially if you're going for the Tom Selleck stash. I mean, he may not be quite as legendary as Burt Reynolds' status yet, but, you know, you got to give him time, and that's why they can't let him shave.
You don't think Tom Selleck's in the same league as Burt Reynolds as mustaches go?
I don't know, man. They're both pretty epic. I think, if we're going to put it in, like, Pokemon terms, I think Please. Tom Selleck is one evolution away from Burt Reynolds.
Wow.
I
love the Tom Selleck, man. He's like my favorite. Anytime somebody gave a hero a problem when I was growing up, I'd be like, Tom Selleck could kick his ass. Whether it be a Terminator, a Predator, an alien, you name it, Tom Selleck could kick its ass. That was my response.
I would say Burt Reynolds is more famous than Tom Selleck, but I think Tom Selleck is more closely associated with his mustache, I think.
That's probably true, and he is the one that there was kind of like a public outcry when, what TV show was he on? Was he on Friends or something like that? And he had his mustache shaved off, and everybody's like, what the fuck is this, you know? all of a sudden, it looked like a completely different guy, and it made him look a lot younger, too, probably. But, yeah, I remember what a scandal it was when he shaved it off. So, yeah, he's definitely known for his stash. I'll give you that.
Yeah, so I think we're going to be watching this movie going like, did he have the stash in this one? Is he not the stash in this one?
All of a sudden, his upper lip just kind of starts floating, you know, autonomously.
Yeah, and now, so with that, we're getting a lot of rumblings that Zack Snyder's future involvement with Warner Brothers is going to be at a significantly smaller capacity. We don't know if this was related to the tragedy that befell his family or if just Warner Brothers is trying to go in a different direction, so it begs the question of, since Joss Whedon's going to be overseeing so much more of this movie, you know, there may be an issue of credit at this point since it has been so public. So, Justin, should we be worried that there's so much reshoots, that it's so much more than they originally thought, or should we just be like, well, they just want to get it right?
Yeah, I think they just want to get it right, and it's one of those things where a new set of eyes probably looked down and saw what they had and felt that we need to bridge some gaps to make it easier for the viewers. And Warner Brothers said, okay, let's do it. They got to get it right. They can't, after having a couple of panned movies and then having the success of Wonder Woman, they don't want to dip down again. They want to keep going up. And I think that taking a step back and just sort of meshing it out a little bit is the right thing to do. Don't change the movie. They're adding to it. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Do you think we're going to have a Wonder Woman effect to where either her role will be significantly buffed up or changed to a more leadership position? And if so, do you think that's the right direction? In a film that stars Batman as well?
I don't know. I don't know. I think that there's nothing wrong with more Wonder Woman. In the initial trailers that we got, it appeared that both Wonder Woman and Batman had a lot of scenes together, both in and out of costume. So I'm all for more of them, because they're basically putting a team together. So the more the merrier, as far as I'm concerned. But, I mean, I just like their dynamic. I think that they played off each other very well, so I'll take more if I can get it. I just don't want to watch the movie, and maybe it has something to do with the villains, too. Like, one of the biggest complaints in all of comic book movies is the villains are never fleshed out, and it's always garbage. So that might be what they're working on, too.
Yeah, it could be, yes. We saw a lot of Steppenwolf in the trailer, so it'll be interesting to see if what part he has to play, if he's just an emissary for Darkseid, or if, you know, we're going to get an actual three-dimensional character in him. Mm-hmm. I think that Jason Momoa, I think, was the big winner at Comic-Con. He was throwing out stuff left and right when they were asking him questions about Aquaman. They showed some footage from Aquaman, and at one point they showed this big armada coming, and it's supposed to be a big secret, but Jason Momoa is like, yeah, it's Ocean Master's army. So he was pretty cool. He was really cool on stage because you could tell he was kind of like the loud, boisterous voice on set, really offset, because Affleck was kind of subdued during the panel. He came out and smartly at the very beginning, because there was all the rumblings earlier on in the week about them trying to figure out a way to get Batman out of, or Ben Affleck out as Batman, and like right off the bat he addressed it, and he's like Batman is fucking awesome, and I would be the biggest idiot in the world if I didn't want to play Batman. So, you know, take it for what it is. You know, we'll see what happens. But at least the Comic-Con, Ben Affleck put on the face that he wants to be Batman as long as he can. But then, of course, we heard the Flash movie was going to be about Flashpoint. And, Justin, tell us what Flashpoint is and how this could affect Ben Affleck as Batman.
Right. So in Flashpoint, it's kind of a big deal because the universe, the DC universe, as we know it, gets changed. Barry Allen goes back in time, makes some alterations to his past, which ultimately have a ripple effect into the future that we know. And if that's the case, then it is an opportunity for Warner Brothers to make changes. After Flash thinks that he fixes everything and heads back to his own time, we could very well see a new DCEU. The problem with that, I was thinking about this. So, of course, several months ago, back in the winter when there was initial talks about Batman, or about Ben Affleck leaving, you had thrown out that theory. Like, hey, what if they're just going to Flashpoint the shit out of this and change everything, since no one likes this Snyderverse? That is a very solid theory, and it can happen. The only problem is we've also argued that viewers aren't exactly up to snuff on comic books, and it might not make sense to your average viewer. And that's where some deep explanations are going to have to happen, and it might be potentially problematic. I mean, it can still pull it off, but at the same time, there's still going to be those people saying, wait a minute, what's going on? Since we're so used to Batman changing every couple of years anyway, it's not the end of the world, but I am very happy with Ben Affleck as Batman, and I would hate to see him go. But if they're going to do it, then Flashpoint is definitely the way. You have Barry go back in time, fix some things, change some things, and then it ruins everything. And then we have movies going forward trying to deal with that After Effects.
Now, in the post-Flashpoint DC universe, Bruce Wayne isn't Batman. Batman is actually Thomas Wayne. And in the Snyderverse, we see Thomas Wayne in Batman v Superman, played by none other than our buddy Jeffrey Dean Morgan, Negan himself, the comedian from Watchmen. I mean, that's never going to happen, but that would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
if you had to replace Ben Affleck.
He could do it. I mean, even if he did it for a few minutes, like, let's just pretend for a second that they do stick with that sort of storyline and Thomas Wayne is Batman. That would only happen for a few minutes in the movie, and that could easily be pulled off that way.
Now, so Randy, as someone who, you know, you're not a comic book reader, from a story standpoint and from an audience standpoint, do you think that audiences could accept a reboot of that magnitude, kind of forget what you saw? And, you know, obviously they would still probably keep Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman because she is so popular, and everyone else, assumingly they want to stay on, they can stay on as their character. Do you think that viewers would be able to follow a vastly changed DCEU?
I don't know.
Remember Rogue One wasn't allowed to advertise for fear that it would be confused with Rogue Nation, the Mission Impossible movie.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I'm always of the opinion that you cannot give people too much credit when it comes to having had or any kind of like pre-existing knowledge of a situation. You know, you got to assume everybody's going into it completely cold, and you got to assume that everybody is basically half brain dead when they go into a movie. So I'm going to say it's going to confuse and frustrate a lot of people. But even above and beyond that, I think there's going to be a lot of people who do understand comics and how things can quickly reboot and how universes can change and multiverses exist. You know, I think it could frustrate them because they've already devoted a certain amount of time, energy, and love for previous iterations of these characters, and if you just go and shit can all of it, it can just be super frustrating. Because the thing is with that franchise is it's not even that old. They haven't even been, they're not that many movies deep yet for them to be thinking about hitting the old reset button. I am super excited at the fact that Ben Affleck is saying he's not going to be leaving as Batman. That is kind of a relief. Just because I like Affleck, and granted, again, still, I haven't seen BVS, but, you know, I did see a snippet of his performance as Batman in Suicide Squad, so I guess that counts for something. But I just like the idea of him being Batman, and I want to give it a shot. I feel like if they were to pull the plug, or if he were to pull the plug on it, it would be way too soon. And that's just kind of how I feel about the entire DC situation right now. It's like, if you pull the plug on the whole thing, it's just going to feel too soon.
Yeah, he's without a doubt the best part of Batman v Superman. He's a very awesome Batman.
Big as shit, too, man. That's a yeah. Monster.
You even see him working out in one scene.
I've never seen Batman so big. He's got bulges, Randy. Bulges.
I know you like the bulges.
Bulges on bulges on bulges.
It's intense.
I watched the other two panels. The Blade Runner panel was pretty uneventful, with the exception of at one point Chris Hardwick told Harrison Ford he was going to tickle him to get information out of him. And I think Harrison Ford's stood up and said, like, come at me, bro, kind of thing. And then someone had asked Harrison Ford, is your goal to reboot all of your former characters? And his response was, you're goddamn right it is. So I like that. And then, again, the Ready Player One panel with Steven Spielberg and Ernest Cline, who wrote the book, and Zach Penn, who wrote the script, and the cast was, oh my God, it was so good, but I don't want to bore the rest of you. So moving on to Marvel.
Can we just say really quick that the Blade Runner experience at Comic-Con was amazing?
Absolutely. Tell them all about it.
Yeah, so we went into this giant tent that was probably about, I don't know, maybe 50 yards long, maybe a little bit more. But inside, they recreated a city block in Los Angeles, in a dystopian Los Angeles. And there were police and prostitutes and alcohol and costumes. And it was incredible. And they sort of had that don't break the fourth barrier sort of mentality. They're all in character, and it was a lot of fun, and I enjoyed the hell out of it. And there was snow and rain and flying cars. They were parked, obviously, but still pretty neat. We got to get some Johnny Walker. We got the red, the black, and the blue. And then we also got some cold noodles, which were gross. And then it was just a really cool atmosphere, and I probably could have hung out there for a little while longer. I really dug it.
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of, like Not Scary Farm or something, if you're from Southern California, to where just everyone was in character, and, like, there was no breaking them, and they were, you know, there was a cop, and he was a cop. You know, he pulled our buddy Felix, like he just grabbed him and yanked him off to the side, like, you know, come and scanned him to make sure he wasn't a replicant, which, of course, he was, but, you know, filthy replicants.
Yeah.
And, I definitely second what Justin said, that it was pretty impressive, you know, because we do a lot of the experiences at Comic-Con, like escape rooms and stuff like that, and, you know, they're all, you know, pretty, you know, they're fun, but they're all pretty, you know, much the same, and this was something very unique that they had must have spent a ton of time and effort recreating this intersection, this half block of Los Angeles in 2049.
Yeah, it was cool. I dug it.
Yeah.
Kudos to those guys.
Kudos to Warner Brothers and Alcon Entertainment.
Yeah, it's probably going to be better than the movie.
No, I'm actually pretty pumped for. I mean, between Roger Deakins' cinematography on this movie and Denis Villeneuve directing it, it looks incredible. I mean, obviously there hasn't been a lot of story or acting in the trailers, but the visuals look just stunning. But I could be alone. Randy, back me up here. This movie looks really good, right?
Oh, it looks amazing, and I'm a big fan of the look and the aesthetic of the original, so I'm going to see it based on, if nothing else, that alone. But also, even from the trailer, the music, it sounds just like the 80s version of the soundtrack and everything, yeah. And that kind of makes me feel a little extra nostalgic for it, so yeah, I'm excited about it. I just love the look of it.
Now, I know, Justin, you, like me, weren't an enormous fan of the original Blade Runner, but are you going to see the first one, or are you kind of wait to see like what people say about it before you check it out?
Oh, no, I'll go check it out.
Or are you just going to skip it?
No, I'll check it out. I feel like I owe it to myself to see it.
And then when you see that block they recreate, you'd be like, I've been there!
Yeah.
I drank, right? What was it, like the Bibu bar or something like that? You could say, I have been in there. I've drinking and had cold noodles in there.
Yes. Huh. This is all true.
Yes, it was. Yes, that.
I think it's
the other
BB's.
Huge...
BB's
was
bar.
It BB's?
Yeah.
Could be. B-I-B-I.
BB. Boo boo.
Bang bang.
Bang bang.
Into the room. Bang bang all over you.
So Warner Brothers started Saturday off with a bang, and Marvel closed it out definitely with a bang. They brought all their heavy hitters. They brought Black Panther, Ant-Man, Captain Marvel, Thor, and Avengers Infinity War, which unfortunately still hasn't released the footage shown from Infinity War. There's some leaked stuff out there, so maybe if they get too busy closing down all these links for the leaked footage, they might release it, but... it started off with Ant-Man. Ant-Man came out. They announced that Michelle Pfeiffer was going to play Jane Pym, who was the original Wasp. And then they also announced that Walton Goggins is going to play one of the film's villains, and that Lawrence Fishburne was going to play Goliath, which is a guy who can also change his shape and become bigger. So this cast is pretty stacked. I mean, aside from, you know, your Paul Rudd, you got Michael Pena, Michael Douglas, Lawrence Fishburne, Michelle Pfeiffer. You got Kate from Lost. You got Walton Goggins. That's a pretty good cast. Does these new announcements excite you, Randy? Did you see Ant-Man?
I did see Ant-Man. I actually really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I'm stoked. I thoroughly enjoyed Ant-Man, so I'm down for anything more that I can get my hands on, you know, or get my eyeballs on, as it were.
I like it. Captain Marvel, they made the announcement that the villains in Captain Marvel were going to be the Skrulls, which are the arch enemies of the Kree, who you'll remember from Guardians of the Galaxy. Running the Accuser is a Kree extremist, to be more specific.
Yeah.
And they also mentioned that Captain Marvel was going to be a prequel, that it was going to take place in the 90s, well before the original Iron Man, and that Nick Fury was going to have two eyes. So, Justin, what kind of fun possibility is this open, and where the hell was Captain Marvel during the events of Avengers?
I don't know the answer to that. Maybe she's off in Skrull Land learning how to be amazing. I don't like that. I just feel like superheroes and superpowers and aliens are a new concept to the people of our world in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, to the point where New York was a surprise to everyone. So I feel like Carol Danvers can't be a part of that. I think she needs to be somewhere else. Like how Guardians of the Galaxy, they aren't on Earth. They're far, far away. And so I think that would be okay.
Yeah, it makes sense. And I think it was Stephen K. James, who went down to San Diego with us, pointed out that Nick Fury, I think in Iron Man 2, makes a mention that Tony Stark asked him what happened to his eye, and he makes reference to the fact that the last time he trusted someone, he got this, and pointing to his like missing eye. So you think we're going to see the formation of Nick Fury losing his eye, and is that something we care about, Randy?
Honestly, more screen time for Samuel Jackson is never a bad thing. So, yeah, of course, it's great. It's great. I'd love to see it. But I, too, am curious to see how they're going to kind of deal with the storyline of having her be around or established or hidden somewhere, but no one else of importance knew about it.
Right, like maybe she has to like go off into space to like combat them or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Gets maybe. Lost.
She gets lost on her way back. Thor Ragnarok, we got yet another great trailer. I think the first trailer caught everyone by surprise. I know Randy wasn't as big a fan as Justin and I on the trailer, but what about this second trailer, Randy? Do you enjoy this trailer more than the first one? It really seemed to ramp up the humor and maybe give us a little more of the story.
Yeah, I thought it was okay. It didn't
Or do
suck.
You just hate Thor? Is Thor just someone who doesn't interest you?
I mean, really, honestly, Thor is my least favorite of the pantheon of the Marvel Cinematic Universe right now, which is really saying something, considering, you know, Natalie Portman was in the earlier movies, and I do have a soft spot for her. But I don't know, I'm just not really into Thor. But, you know, the redeeming quality is the fact that I do really like Hulk. So, being that this is going to be kind of a vehicle for Hulk to get back into the game, that is getting me more excited.
Yeah, I watched their panel as well, and it was real interesting to see Taika Waititi, who's the director, and Mark Ruffalo, who plays the Incredible Hulk, Bruce Banner, discuss his character. And I guess in this movie, the Hulk doesn't want to be Banner. And so he's almost, the whole time he's been on this planet, he hasn't transformed back into Bruce Banner. And so the Hulk kind of has like a third grade vocabulary. And so that's when you actually hear him speak. So, Justin, you love Thor, and more importantly, you love Chris Hemsworth. This even has your Carl Urban in it. Did this trailer make it go 6 to midnight in your pants?
Yeah, I was really excited for it. I loved every second of it, and the poster looks amazing. It's out of this world. It's one of the coolest movie posters I've seen in years.
Yeah, it's funny. It came on the heels of me bitching that Marvel never makes any good posters. You're like, what about the Thor poster, you asshole? And I'm like, yeah that one is pretty good.
Yeah, it's fun. Usually you got to get like a some sort of import poster. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, no, it's super cool. I love how colorful it is.
And, yeah, it looks great.
Now, we'll talk Avengers, but the film that closed out the Marvel panel and I guess brought the house down and everyone was just beside themselves with emotion and whatnot was Black Panther. But they brought out the cast, and director Ryan Coogler came out, and this cast is just top notch from like top to bottom. And they showed footage from the opening of the film, which is this like casino. It's this real high end casino. You have Chadwick Boseman, who plays the Black Panther out of costume, obviously. Him and his assistants kind of walking around, and Andy Serkis's Ulysses Klaue comes in. He's got this like cheap ass little plastic arm. And even to the point of people are making fun of him. And then by the end of it, he takes off that plastic arm. He's got his, you know, arm cannon that he has in the comics. And he just lays waste to the place. And everyone that was in attendance was just in awe. And with Black Panther being the film that comes out, Thor's next and then Black Panther, I think it was exciting for them to show it. And I'm very excited just because of the talent that's behind this thing. Randy, are you... You got a glimpse of him in Civil War, and you've seen the one trailer. Is Black Panther something that's on your radar, or is it something kind of like Doctor Strange that you'll see out of, you know, your loyalism to Marvel, but it's not something you're looking forward to?
Yeah, I mean, it's not something that I'm really all that aware of. I don't know a whole lot about the character of Black Panther other than what little we've already seen. So I'll see it out of the same sense of duty that I saw Doctor Strange. But I will say, since I really liked Doctor Strange and I really liked Ant-Man and some of the other peripheral little characters that have been getting pulled into the fray, I'm sure I'm going to enjoy it too.
Yeah, I mean, this cast has, you got your Andy Serkis, you got your Michael B. Jordan, you got your Martin Freeman, you got your Forest Whitaker, Chadwick Boseman returns, obviously, as the Black Panther, you got Lupita Nyong'o, you got Angela Bassett, Sterling K. Brown, who played Chris Darden in The People vs. O.J. Simpson, and he's going to win an Emmy for just This Is Us. You got Felicia Rashad. It's a pretty stacked cast, and with Ryan Coogler, who I know, Justin, you're a fan of, because he did Creed. Where does this movie stand on your excitement level, Justin?
Yeah, I'm pretty pumped, man. It's going to be that movie that kicks off the new year, so I think it'll set the bar pretty high, and everything else will just have to live up to it.
Yeah, I think I'm hoping it comes out like kind of like Guardians of the Galaxy, where no one really knew what to expect from it, and it just knocks you out of the park, and everyone's like, "Holy shit, Black Panther's the best thing ever! It's the new Iron Man!"
Right.
And then Avengers: Infinity War. They showed the same footage they showed at D23. It was received equally as well. I mean, that's mostly the big announcements that came out. Was there anything else stuck in your guys' craw?
I'm really excited for Stranger Things 2, or Season 2, rather. I was sad that I wasn't able to watch it this summer, and that it's pushed all the way back to almost Halloween. That was going to be my summer show.
I know, it is such a great summer show, too.
But it's okay, Game of Thrones got pushed back, so Game of Thrones is your summer show.
No. But, like... You know, Orange is the New Black is always comes out in the summertime, but this season I'm just not into it. It's been torture, and I can't watch it, and I don't know. And that Stranger Things is going to be my fallback, but I got to wait, Dave. And the trailer looked amazing. I like how they're in the arcade. We all know that arcades are a thing of the past, and it's so upsetting. And it was really cool to see them just sort of as best friends playing an arcade together, because how many of us did that? Circa 1980, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, heck yeah.
The little bike gang.
Causing trouble.
Yeah.
Riding the dirt paths, coming home when the street lights come on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so quintessentially 80s. Whenever you see anything like kids on bikes, I don't know, I just don't see that these days as much.
Yeah, kids don't appreciate the freedom anymore. And those who would have overprotective parents, you probably would let them out anyways.
Yeah. Isn't that the truth? And poor little Will Byers is flip-flopping between worlds, and he's going to have emotional problems. On the plus side, everyone will believe him. It's not like he's got to, be at odds with the group. They're going to say, what's wrong? He can tell them, and they can say, oh, shit, how do we fix it? It's not all that Will's a creep. It's, oh, great, now we got to deal with a new problem. Which is encouraging.
We need to move!
Yeah, exactly. Why do we still live here?
What did you think about the trailer, Andy? You're big Stranger Things, Pearson. Did you enjoy the trailer as well?
Yeah, I like the fact that it feels like they're taking it in an even darker direction than Season 1. And I'm a big fan of anything that's kind of self-referential or referential of, one of my favorite periods in time, the 80s. So, yeah, of course, we're in the Ghostbusters outfits. That's going to get me all excited and everything. And I'm just so happy that they're acting quick on this, because kids at that age can age so fast. They can grow up so fast. And they really only have a short window of time to kind of capture that magic of adolescence, that they're going for there. So I'm so glad that they are able to maintain a schedule of, even if it is coming out a little bit later so that we can hit the Halloween time this year. I still like the idea that they're still hitting a season every year. Just let's as terrible as this is going to sound, let's milk those kids for all they're worth while they're young enough to be able to pull off these roles and still have it be so quaint and charming.
Absolutely.
That's right, and while we get him for scale.
Yeah.
Save money.
When the show started, I was under the impression that, this would be great if it's sort of new characters every season. And then after falling in love with those kids, I can't imagine anybody else. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, like a True Detective style.
True Detective model, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, fun Comic-Con as always, but this Sunday night we got a new Game of Thrones, so that was exciting. I don't know. Sorry?
I didn't say
that. Oh, I thought you said something. Yeah, so we got Stormborn, Game of Thrones, Season 7, Episode 2, and I'm happy to report that two episodes in, Cersei, still alive. She's only got to make it 11 more episodes. The countdown is real.
Yeah.
I'm not going to put a lot of money on that, but every episode she doesn't die in is a win. So let's get your initial thoughts. Justin, what did you think of the episode?
That was good. At first I just thought it was sort of setting the stage for the season, you know, like just being one of those I want to call a filler episode, but definitely one of those ones that gets you ready for things to come. There were some interesting scenes, you know, John talking about going to see Daenerys, and I really like the council meeting with all these powerful people in one room at Dragonstone going over their plan. I thought that was fantastic. I like how she doesn't want to be the Queen of Ashes. She wants to, like we talked about, have Westeros behind her. Don't let them be afraid of her. Let them love her. And so I think that's the right way to go. And then ultimately, we got a crazy ship battle. And I'm not really up to snuff on my maritime disasters, but there were a lot of ships, and then there were no ships. So it was weird. Like, all of a sudden, there's this little thing on floating on a little box.
Little piece of shit.
So those were my immediate takeaways, but we can dissect this episode as much or as little as you like.
Absolutely. Oh. Randy, sorry.
I was just going to say real quick, it was kind of a letdown as far as the gift that Euron was going to give Cersei. I was expecting something a little bit more grand than Little Miss Martell.
Right.
But whatever. I mean, she killed her daughter, so I mean, I guess that's fair, but I thought it was going to be something a little bit more exciting.
A little shorter, more facial hair.
Yeah,
maybe a hand of the queen badge.
Yeah.
Did you think about the episode, Randy?
I definitely enjoyed it. I liked the sexo, such as it were, and yeah, you know, the what I'm going to call like the pirate siege kind of thing going on at the end, the ship to ship combat. I kind of dig the big old like bridge that just drops down and clamps onto another boat. That was kind of cool. Now, I don't know. Just something about that was just lacking for me. And definitely, like you guys said, when it comes to what gift he was planning on procuring for Cersei, I would have thought it would be way more significant than that. And I don't want to spoil anything, so I'm just going to throw out a spoiler warning now. But I did read like the little one or two sentence synopsis of the next episode, you know, like if you're flipping through the DVR or cable box or whatever, it'll show you a description of the next episode. The next episode says something to the effect of Cersei returns a gift. And it just sounds so, like, suburban, you know, it just sounds like, so, you know, just soccer mom going down to the mall kind of thing. And so that just kind of made me chuckle a little when I read that description. But I don't think...
We had talked about that description a couple podcasts ago, and we pointed out that the Mama Martell, whose name I always forget, Oberyn's wife, she gave Cersei a necklace to like say sorry your kid's dead, like a sorry your kid's dead necklace, and so I would imagine that's the gift she gives back to Mama Martell before like she has her killed or something.
Yeah.
Shame. If I were to guess.
Shame.
Sorry, I interrupted you, Randy.
Nope, that's it.
Oh, all right.
Train of thought has pulled into the station.
Sorry. I really loved the first, like, two-thirds of the episode. Like, my favorite Game of Thrones shit is just, like, when the people are out sitting around talking about stuff. And that scene between Dany and Varys, where she's, like, basically calling out his loyalty, and he's like, dude, I'm loyal to the people, and I thought that's what that was your thing was, so chill the fuck out, lady.
Yeah.
I love that he, and like, whole time Tyrion's like, you know, Varys has been really good to us. She's like, I'm not, I'll get to you, dwarf, later. And Varys just like stands his ground, and he's like, your dad was like the worst. He's like, your dad was terrible. And I really, really, really liked that exchange. I can't believe that after, you know, 6.5 seasons, next episode, Dany and Jon Snow are finally going to meet. Like, mm-hmm. It's just been like so, it's just been coming for so long. Like, we've been leading to this moment. And they released some images today of John arriving at Dragonstone. I'm like, oh my god, I can't believe Jon Snow and Daenerys are going to meet. And I got all excited. I got excited when I saw Nymeria for like the brief second she was there.
Yeah.
I don't know how to interpret the scene. To where at the end she says, you know, that's not you. Yeah, it's kind of a play on when Ned was trying to get her to be like this, like the Lady of Winterfell, and she's like, that's not me. So part of me hopes that like she realizes like she kind of went off her quest to kill the queen, and that Nymeria is like the person who's like, you know, Winterfell will still be there. Just head on south and kill the queen. But on the other hand, I really want to see Arya back in Winterfell, so I'm kind of torn. Do you think she's still going to keep marching north, Justin, or do you think her interaction with Nymeria is going to remind her, like, that's the old Arya, the new Arya kills queens?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Dave, and I'm hoping that she just heads back to Winterfell.
Yeah, I get that reunion.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because Bran's going to be there in the next couple episodes.
Yeah, and what about the in the scenes for next week when it showed Jon Snow walk into the Dragonstone throne room? Can you imagine if that's like the last like shot of the episode? And you gotta wait a whole another week.
No, I bet he shows up. I think their initial interaction is not gonna go well, so I think the whole episode will be kind of like them kind of in a pissing contest.
Mm-hmm.
And I think something will happen at the end of the episode that kind of like solidifies their like union. But I think I could be wrong. I've been fooled before, but I think that they've put so much weight on this meeting that they're going to want to do it right. Mm-hmm. And Randy, what do you think of these editors having so much fun this week? Last week they had the shit pans and the stew. This week they had the cutting of grayscale and then Arya crunching into that pot pie.
Yeah.
I think they're having some fun this year.
They are. They're totally fucking with the audience. But no, I think that's great. Like with the pus coming out of the moon and the juice coming out of the pie. It's like, yeah.
Gross.
Yeah.
I didn't know the cure for grayscale was just to cut it off.
Mm. That might be step one.
The key to it is going to be whatever kind of salve he puts on, you know, that big, open, gaping flesh wound.
Mm-hmm. Some kind of bomb.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And Sam was in this episode so much.
Oh, I know.
He had like four scenes in this episode. I'm like, we already found this dragon glass. We don't need you anymore. You sent the raven. John got it. You're good.
Have you guys heard the theory where the entire story of Game of Thrones, like as the novels were written and as the TV show is being told, is from Sam's point of view? Like, he's the one documenting it and writing it?
Don't tell me
that. I mean, a lot of people are substantiating that theory because of the fact that chandelier there in the library is, right, you know... Yeah, it's the opening, and then they've got the maps, like the little looking glasses that you look through in the map sequence at the beginning. They actually have those there at the library. It could be very possible that he's the one that's like documenting this entire thing.
Oh, God.
It's kind of an offshoot of a popular theory that the Song of Fire and Ice, and that it's some old lady telling these noble kids the story of Jon Snow and Daenerys Targaryen.
Like old Nan?
Yeah, like an old man used to tell them all stories.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's this old lady telling them the story of Fire and Ice. And,
my God.
I mean, it doesn't really negate these events happened, but it's just kind of a, I don't like it, which kind of brings me to a larger point that I wanted to kind of ask you guys. Now, so the first five seasons that went off of the blueprint that George R. R. Martin had created was very unpredictable, you know. You thought one thing and then a thing happened. Like, you know, they almost rewarded the bad deeds and the good deeds went punished. Since, you know, last season and so far this season, everything seems to kind of be, I don't want to use the word predictable, but, you know, the way you would expect it to go. You'd expect John to be this heroic character who rose from the dead and stuff like that. And I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad thing, but I'm getting the impression that we're not seeing any curveballs, and it's I don't know if that's just them setting us up for like a huge swerve, like Danny is the end-all villain in this, which would be awesome if she just becomes the Mad Queen and has to be taken down. Or should I just be happy that like the good guys are finally, you know, getting a moment of light and shining off?
I think that the events that have happened in the previous seasons have built us to this point. Like, I honestly feel like it can't go any other way. There were plenty of surprises last season. Like, I wasn't prepared for what happened with Bran and, you know, the tree guy and all the horrible with the White Walkers. I wasn't prepared for Cersei to blow up the Sept. I wasn't prepared for the outcome of Battle of the Bastards. There was a lot of crazy surprises. And I think that there's still room, especially when you have a monkey wrench like Euron Greyjoy. He is a very unpredictable human being. There is sort of the bad guy does win a lot in Game of Thrones, and Cersei is still in power. And I like the idea that you just threw out that Daenerys could end up becoming just as bad as her old man.
Yeah, evil Danny. Yeah, I mean that would definitely be exciting. Plus, hopefully that means Cersei lives, and you know, anytime Cersei lives, it's a good day.
Right. It was just so much horrible for so long that I don't know. It's nice to have a win for the good guys every once in a while.
And you had touched on the battle on the sea at the end of the episode, and for whatever reason, like the whole time I'm watching it, I mean, I wasn't in it. Just and like you had pointed out, it's because I don't give two fucks about anyone named Greyjoy or any of the Sand Snakes. They can all die and sink the bottom of the ocean for all I care about. But it felt like they were trying to save money because, you know, we really only see like 20 guys on clearly a soundstage, and they added all that digital embers to help mask whatever. So I hope that means that we're going to see some shit coming pretty soon, and they're saving money for some dragons or something. And I just hope that I'm just trying to wrap my head around, you know, we only have 11 episodes of Game of Thrones left, and the White Walkers still haven't even made it to the Wall. I mean, we and right now we're moving all the pieces to put them where they need to be so there can be this thing. But I mean, I think we all are under the impression that we'll take care of Cersei this season, and next season will be all White Walkers. But then I was trying to think, like, do I want 11 hours of, like, a White Walker battle? Like, can they make the Night King, like, interesting and not just, you know, this one-dimensional, like, harbinger of death? You know, maybe we see, like, his backstory or something. Or do we like that he's, like, a faceless villain, like the Nazis or like zombies or like robots that, you know, we don't have to worry about the moral implications of murdering all these people. Does any of that make any sense, Randy?
It is. I think you just can't bear the idea of living in a world or watching a season without Cersei. You know, you don't want her to get dealt with this season. But I agree. I think it would get fatiguing if the entirety of next season, granted all six episodes of it is all it will be, but if it's all just finding White Walkers, it might be, I don't know, just lacking a little substance. But
well, all six episodes next year are supposed to be feature length. They're all supposed to be over 80 minutes, and the bulk of them are over 90 minutes. So I mean, it's a lot of action, and I'm still trying to figure out what part, because I mean, obviously at this point we're only showing characters who are important. You know, we're not introducing new characters really, with the exception of Euron, because I think they want him to be. Every year we have to have a despicable bad guy. You know, for the longest time it was Joffrey, then we had Ramsay. I think Euron is the despicable character for this year that we're all meant to just outright loathe.
It was pretty cool when he came riding down on the ramp. I was like at a Bon Jovi concert or something.
I liked it because I thought he was going to murder some Greyjoys. But to answer Randy's question, I'm fine if Cersei's time to go, if Jaime's the one who does it. So,
Yeah. It has to be the right time.
Yeah, and so I'm just with there's so many characters like Sam, who I'm still trying to figure out if he has a bigger part to play. Obviously, uniting him with Jorah Mormont is so that, you know, Sam can go to Dragonstone and be instantly trusted by Dany. I understand that. It's an ends to a mean. But then we have characters like, you know, the Brothers Without Banners. You know, we have Dondarrion and we have the Hound. And I'm just trying to figure out why all these pieces are going to... They need to start clicking into place. And I think the next two episodes are kind of be like the make or break. Like, we've set everything up these first two episodes, and now it's time to give them the old razzle-dazzle. Do you foresee a scenario, Justin, where Dany realizes that the Game of Thrones is just stupid, and you know she understands that the White Walkers are the problem, and she almost tries to unite the kingdoms and unite with Cersei to take down the greater evil, or has Cersei done so much that she needs to get her comeuppance?
I mean, assuming that she understands what the White Walkers are, I would feel like Cersei is so insignificant that she doesn't have to worry about her right now. Let's take care of the bigger problem first, and then we'll deal with the C word on the throne.
Nice.
I think she's definitely going to get her comeuppance, but I just don't think it's going to be anytime soon.
Nice. Well, Randy, we had discussed on the car ride home from San Diego yesterday the idea about ice dragons and the Night King maybe killing one of Daenerys' dragons. Do you like the idea of an ice dragon coming this season, or do you not bear the thought of a dragon dying?
I don't. Yeah, see, I don't want to break up those three dragons. They're a family. No, but the idea of an ice dragon and how powerful you were talking about they are, I think that would be amazing to see, and it's especially cool because it's something we haven't seen in Game of Thrones yet, so that would be absolutely wonderful.
I could see that being the, like, holy shit, second to last episode of the season moment.
Well, then that's where that big crossbow thing that they had in the last episode is going to come into play. We need something that can crush a dragon's skull. Bring out the giant catapult.
Well, I got one shot. Don't fuck it up.
Yeah.
You got to tie a rope around it so you can pull it back and shoot again.
Yeah, I mean, the bard from Lord of the Rings, or The Hobbit.
Exactly. Get fucking Luke Evans.
Luke Evans, what are you doing? No, nothing. I'm not afraid. But yeah, Game of Thrones. I thought it was a good episode. Like I said, I like Game of Thrones the most when it gets interesting people together in a room to talk. And every time that happened, I liked it. Like, even when Baelish was trying to talk to Jon Snow, or when, like, the council of all, like, the female leaders was talking to Dragonstone, you know, stuff like that really gets me excited. I liked when Cersei was trying to talk to them about, like, was in the throne room telling everyone that, like, she brought Unsullied and foreigners to our land. They took her jobs.
Yeah.
So, yeah. She trumped it up. But, yeah, we also saw a movie this weekend. We saw Dunkirk. Well, Justin and I saw Dunkirk. Made $50-something million this weekend, so it did pretty good. Mr. Nolan seems to be on fire. I know, Justin, you were lukewarm on it. Would you recommend it to people to see?
Yeah, I think it's worth a watch. I was not prepared for the non-linear storytelling. There are three different timelines that you're dealing with when you watch this motion picture show, and you're given those timelines at the very, very, very beginning, before a single word is spoken. So it's kind of weird, but you have to remember that that's what's happening. There's the troops on the beach that takes place over the course of a week. There are people in ships that take place over the course of a day. And then there are the pilots, and that takes place over the course of an hour. And it keeps sort of intertwining these three timelines as you're watching it for whatever it is, an hour and 45 minutes. So it's not confusing really in any way. It's just kind of irritating, at least it can be, to see the same thing over and over from different points of view.
Did you find that the nonlinear storytelling worked or was necessary?
I think it works, but I don't think it's necessary. But Christopher Nolan obviously disagrees with me.
Right. But I mean, usually, like, when you tell a story from, like, a nonlinear point of view, there's, like, this, like, payoff or this, like, moment. And I didn't feel that. Like, I felt like this story could have been told. The only reason this story wasn't told linearly, I don't know if that's a word, is so we didn't spend the first hour of the movie on the beach.
Right. And that is fair. And the only reason why that, I think why the reason why it has to work is because at the very beginning it mentions in text something about a mole. And you kind of forget about that until there's maybe, 20 minutes left in the movie?
Right.
And then it all kind of starts to make sense. Not that it was confusing, it's just pieces fall into place. And in that sense, I think it works, and it is required. But, I mean, I knew next to nothing about Dunkirk prior to watching this movie. So it was all sort of a surprise for me.
I tried to look it up, and I'm even more confused now, having read like 4 entire Wikipedia pages on it.
Yeah, it was nuts. I did like the that sort of Nazi propaganda that they dropped from the sky, where it's like, you are here, and then it shows all these arrows converging in on their location, like, hey, you're fucked. If you're not a Nazi, then you are fucked. That's basically what that piece of paper said. And that would be scary. That would be this eye-opening, like, just terrifying factor in this war.
Yeah, and then Mr. One Direction uses it for toilet paper.
Oh, yeah. That's good stuff.
Yeah, and what about Tom Hardy? Best eye actor ever. I don't know what it is about him and Christopher Nolan movies where he's got to wear a mask.
Dude, I barely understood a word he said the whole movie. And keep in mind that there are maybe, 10 minutes of spoken dialogue at the most in this
maybe.
Movie?
Maybe. The only one who really speaks is Mark Rylance's character, the guy that has the little boat. Yeah. He's the only one who ever has, like, any lines in this movie.
And Kenneth Branagh does, too, I guess.
Yeah.
But I barely understood a word that Tom Hardy said. I would say maybe 2 and 5 words I would understand.
It was like Bane all over again.
Yeah, it was nuts. So
yeah, Randy, picture Bane flying a fighter jet, and that's what you got. It was like,
yeah,
15 minutes of fuel.
You've sold me. You've sold me on it.
Yeah, I don't get why they went with that. That doesn't make any sense to me. If I was the director, I'd be like, what are you saying, man?
Well, a lot of it comes down to Nolan's insistence on using IMAX cameras. So IMAX cameras, unlike normal film cameras, are incredibly loud, and it makes on-set sound almost unusable. And so the problem is compounded by the fact that Christopher Nolan prefers his performances to be organic and on-set, and so he really, really dislikes ADR. And so usually if you were to film on these cameras, you would basically ADR the whole movie. So if you notice, like, Transformers isn't it, Michael Bay's a big IMAX guy, but his movies don't have a lot of talking, so it's okay. You don't have to use the actual, like, live production sound. But Christopher Nolan is filming on this camera that basically makes it sound like tick 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 tick, like, constantly and probably louder than that. And so all of his movies, these being 60mm from Dark Knight Rises forward, you know, probably Inception forward, a lot of the dialogue is real low and muddled. And Dunkirk, I think, gets away with it because he doesn't talk a lot. But yeah, Tom Hardy, I'm with you on, like, his, and his would have been easier to ADR because he's got a mask over his face the entire movie.
Yeah, they could have fine-tuned it a little bit.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. It's a weird quirk of Nolan, you know. And it's made worse by the fact that he shoots on IMAX cameras, which are notoriously loud.
I don't like it.
But yeah, you should definitely see it, Randy. I think Christopher Nolan's fingerprints are all over this film, and he's an incredibly talented filmmaker, so I can't bitch too much about it. He's really the only...
It's on my short list.
Yeah, I mean, It's good that he's like really the only director out there who has carte blanche to make original films for high budgets. You know, no one else can go to Warner Bros. And say, I want $100 million. I want to make this movie about this obscure thing that happened in Britain. Actually, it happens in France, I guess. Someone else tries to make that movie, it's like, oh, fuck themselves, or they give them, like, here's $10 million. Go make your movie.
Right. Nicolas Cage could do this movie for $5
million. Yeah, and he would get Thomas Jane and Tom Sizemore in it. But yeah, I mean that's what we got. You got a list, right, Justin?
I did, but we can save it for another day.
We're gonna save it for another day. You guys got anything else to add to this fun podcast?
I don't think so.
Anything we missed from the busy weekend, or we talked about? I think pretty much everything.
What's this about? A new Terminator trilogy?
Oh yeah, James Cameron wants to make more Terminator movies. I guess Terminator Genesis wasn't a big enough fuck up for him.
I don't understand, man.
Which part?
Why can't they just leave shit alone?
I don't know. Well, Cameron lost the rights, or didn't lose the rights. He sold the rights to Terminator, you know, however many years ago. And so Mark Ellison, who owns Skydance Productions, who produces, you know, the G.I. Joe movies, the new Star Trek reboots and things like that, also did Genesis. His rights expire in 2018. And so when his rights expire, James Cameron wants to presumably produce, since he's doing Avatar, he probably can't direct. He wants to produce a new trilogy of Terminator films. What that means, nobody knows. It would be assumed that it would be a complete reboot. So
part of, okay, here's why I don't think it'll ever work, is because part of the allure to Terminator was that 80s style of filmmaking where it was just sort of B-budgety, but explosions and violence and a big-ass motherfucker as in the lead role. And that doesn't really work anymore. That, unless you're like The Rock stopping earthquakes with your fists, you can't really have that work anymore. It was that was like sort of the epitome of like 80s cinema. And Terminator 2 was still in the, you know, very early 90s. And it revolutionized, special effects. So it was more of a jaw-dropping, eye-opening experience than it was anything else.
And right. It was a kind really of created cool the new, kind of created the modern blockbuster.
Yes, very much so. So that is why those movies are just not going to work anymore. It's even 3 was. It had a cool ending, but I mean, that was really it. It was kind of a meh movie at best, and there's no way to recreate that magic. And I honestly think that Predator's probably going to fall in that same boat, and that's also why the Alien movies never work anymore, because it's just not, we don't look at movies that way anymore, and right. It's never going to work.
Yeah, I agree with you that I think that's why Predators, the Adrian Brody, or not Adrian Brody, Adrian Brody. I think that's why that movie failed, and I think that Shane Black's The Predator is trying to be a throwback to that 80s, and I don't think that kind of sensibility works anymore. You know, the 80s, I won't say glamorized war, but war was an abstract concept that happened far away that wasn't on TV every day.
Right.
You know, now we get daily reports of terrorist bombings and stuff like that to where, you know, I think we're, as much as we're desensitized to violence, I think we're hypersensitized to, like, things that the Terminator would promote. I think that they would really need to change the game up, you know, maybe go back to its roots. I mean, the first Terminator is a horror movie. I mean, it's not this huge sci-fi thing. I mean, it's this machine who wants to kill you. That's it. It's got sci-fi elements because they're from the future.
It can't but at its be core, reasoned with.
It will not stop until you are dead.
Oh, so great.
So, I mean, I think if they try to go back something like that and not try to go huge, grand sci-fi genre spectacle, try to bring it back to the core principle. Like, the Terminator is a terrifying concept. Something you're going to do in the future has caused a robot from said future to come back to kill you. You don't know why. You have no reason to believe it's coming. At any point, a Terminator come to your door and kill you. that is a frightening concept, and it's something that in today's day and age of, you know, digital spying and stuff like that could really resonate and could really find a hallmark in cinema right now. But having said that, they're going to go Terminator Genesis route and make it this CGI spectacle with the Golden Gate Bridge exploding and shit like that. I don't think people want to see that anymore. I'm with you, Justin. What about you, Randy?
I don't know, man. I'm ready for it to be done.
Just smash the chip and it won't work.
Yeah.
Unplug it.
I don't even remember how Genesis ends. How does Genesis end?
I don't. With the
Didn't kid. It leave it open for a sequel?
It ended with that little boy and like them going back to the house where it was like that kid's birthday where he was getting like Windows 10 or whatever.
What?
There was this new program that was launching. We'll call it Windows 10 because I don't remember what it was. But it was basically going to be Skynet, but it was going to link the whole world to where you're always connected. And Sarah Connor has an encounter with this little boy, and it is a young Kyle Reese, I think. And she's like, hey, everything's going to be okay. And she does like that sort of face-off, hand-on-your-face move, you know, like that they do where they just touch your face like, hey, this is gross. I'm going to give you a disease. Don't touch people's faces. That's a bad move. Anyway, they don't do Windows.
I don't remember anything you said. Like, nothing you mentioned sounds...
They don't launch Windows 10, and Kyle Reese is okay.
This does not sound familiar at all.
Yeah, that's sort of the dumbed down version.
Oh my god, I don't even know what to say.
I'm sorry. It's a dumb movie.
No, it's not you. I believe you explained it better than the movie probably. None of it sounds even partially. This must be my Minority Report. Like, none of this sounds
But familiar. You know what I mean when I say about the face-off, right? You know how, like, John Travolta would rub his hand down his daughter's face and shit like that? Yeah.
Yeah. And they did it at the Oscars to that one singer lady. Get touch her face.
Don't do that. Touching? CDC would have a problem with the face touching.
I can count on, like, one hand the number of people whose faces I've touched.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. So yeah, Terminator, I'm ready for it to die too. I'm with you, Randy.
Yep.
Someone from the future needs to come and kill it.
Pretty much.
Yeah, but cool. Anything else? Anything else fun you want to talk about? Mm-mm. Guns don't kill people. But Bond, you know, Daniel Craig is going to come back for Bond 25.
Oh yeah.
They got a short list of directors, including Denis Villeneuve. Of Arrival, Sicario, and Blade Runner 2049
God, thing. That guy's everywhere.
He is. And they released the weirdest Dark Tower trailer ever, showing like how Dark Tower connects all of Stephen King's movies, which they're calling the Connected Kingdom. Oh. See, it's clever.
Kingdom and, with a K.
Yeah. As opposed to that Kingdom with a C.
I just made an asshole. That's what I do.
Yeah, that is what you do. That's why we love you.
I think Matthew Vaughn should direct James Bond.
I'm in. I wouldn't mind that.
I want to watch everything that he makes.
Anyway. Yeah. He knows how to do action. Let him do the Terminator. Mm-mm. Now we're talking. But yeah. Well, I guess that's all we got, so thank you for joining us for another great episode of the Galaxia Podcast. Make sure you go to Galaxia.com to get all your Comic-Con needs. We've got all the trailers, got all the news, got a bunch of panel recaps. Anything you'd ever want to be, people will think you went to San Diego Comic-Con if you go to our website. And then while you're there, make sure you like us on Facebook and check us out on Twitter, @GeekLegacy. And until next time, we will talk to you later.